Shop the Sherwin-Williams sale and get 30% off Duration, Woodscapes, and SuperDeck products May 1st through the 11th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Victoria Huerman was 13 years old the last time her father killed. She grew up playing video games 10 feet from the room where women were allegedly murdered and dismembered. I guess it's not allegedly anymore. When Rex confessed to her privately, she asked him to. She asked him a question that no child really should ever have to ask a parent, and got an answer that will follow her for the rest of her life. The documentary captured a young woman trying to hold two truths that shouldn't be able to exist in the same person. Siobhan Scott is with myself and Robin Drake as we continue to break down chapter 4 here in the new Gilgo Beach doc, or the fourth part of the Gilgo Beach doc, the Gilgo Beach Killer, House of Secrets, available on Peacock right now. Victoria said something in the documentary that really hit hard. She said nobody really thinks about the daughter of this serial killer. She's dealing with depression, anger, her self-worth is destroyed. She's questioning why she's even here. What is the actual psychological weight of finding out your identity is now permanently tied to a parent's crimes? We've seen this in other cases. We've seen it with BTK and many others. And everyone handles it a little bit differently. Some use it as a way to outreach and help other victims of trauma and abuse. Some fall into, addiction and depression and bad things. What's your take on Victoria and how she's processing all this?
My heart really went out to her. Oh my God. I mean, she is, I think, a well-meaning person. And it's just got to shatter your identity to know that the person that raised you, that you had a certain belief about, is a monster, and mm-hmm. her father is a monster. So I would expect the depression. I would expect the shattered self. Who am I? And again, she's going to have to recreate her identity. And I saw a lot of struggling with that. One of the things that she said that really concerned me, and this would be a place I would want to speak with her more about, was the I forgive him. When they mm-hmm. said, "Do you forgive him?" And she said, "Yes," because I don't want to carry the burden of whatever, however she put it, that it would be a burden to her not to forgive him. That really struck me as quick forgiveness. And that can be a trauma response, because again, we're talking about sadism. Personally, I don't forgive sadists, wouldn't matter who it was.
The only people that want you to are those nutters from IBLP.
The umbrellas, yes.
Yeah, you know, I mean, yeah. I mean, there's evil. This guy was pure evil. He got pure enjoyment out of torturing others. Yeah. He doesn't deserve forgiveness, and you're not a bad person for not forgiving him.
100%. 100%.
What kind of potholes or red flags you think others should be looking out for from her as she's moving through her recovery process that could be stumbling blocks for her? Like, what's the first one or two you think will be hard for her to move through that might pop up that others can notice?
Well, I think the depression is, she's going to need a lot of help with that. And looking through the secondary trauma, because she is a victim too in this. Mm-hmm. And all the things that she's had to listen to and learn, that's going to cause secondary PTSD for her. And that includes reliving the episodes, worried about how other people perceive her all the time. And it's going to affect the trajectory of her life. Now, that doesn't mean it has to ruin her life, but it's going to be a harder life than it would have been. And I loved earlier in the episode where she was visited by Carrie Rossum. Am I getting her name right?
Yeah.
Who has really, really worked on her own healing and now helps other people.
Yeah,
and I think that's a great way to go is, you know, take what's happened to you, heal what you can from your trauma, and then help other survivors. I think that would be a wonderful way to go. But Victoria has got to just be devastated. And this is fairly early into the whole thing. But yeah, forgiving him, this cultural myth about, oh, well, if I don't forgive, then I'm carrying the burden. I call BS on that.
Yep.
I call BS.
Cutting letters out, man.
1,000%. I mean, the two of them, Victoria and Asa, seem to have, and this was evident in the first part of the doc, the first three parts that was years ago. Victoria was very much on the page early on that, yeah, he probably did this. Mm-hmm. Now it's a cold, hard truth, so it hits even harder. Asa was not on that page. She now clearly is, but still, the dynamic of still wanting to be close to him, the dynamic really hasn't changed all that much in terms of the desire of either of them wanting to have some sort of relationship with Rex. How much, and healing obviously is a very personal journey for every person here, whether it's daughter, mother, but sometimes helping each other, having gone through a shared experience, trauma bonded. How much do Victoria and Asa need each other on their healing journey, if you will, especially if both of them are viewing Rex in very different lights?
Read my mind, Tony. Do
they not need each other? Would it be better if they did this journey separately rather than sharing notes?
I think the second is true, that Victoria is, I think, a healthier person than Asa, which is why she was open to the possibility from the beginning that this could be true. And Asa is in a still very much of an enmeshed emotional relationship with Rex. And so having them do their work separately, I think there was a place to do it together as a family. And maybe that would happen every so often where they get together with the therapist and talk about that. But Victoria, I think, will probably be more able to rapidly move forward and develop her own identity. She's at the phase of life we talk about individuation, which is developing, you know, who you are from apart from who your parents are. And I think she has the capacity to go on and have a good life. And so having more separation from Asa's reality is probably good.
Yeah, that's why curiosity on that one, just because I was thinking exactly the same thing Tony was, and that is, can she keep healing at any rate if she's still living in that house where her mom is living in the bedroom where the horrendous things happened? Or does she really need to disconnect from her mother as well? Or can she disconnect from Rex but still maintain connection with her mother, who doesn't seem to be able to move on?
Yeah, I would say definitely getting out of that house. I would like to see that house torn down.
Yeah,
and, you know, I mean, I can't imagine being the neighbors. Can you imagine being the construction guys that went in to work on that basement? I mean, You know, that's that was the first place mine went. Would I want to be in there removing that drywall and putting in a new ceiling? It's like, this is just, it's a place that needs to go. And I think the more separation Victoria can have, it doesn't mean never speaking to her mother again, but just separating their emotional journey, because this is, they're in very different places.
I'd imagine the physical proximity of it also has a massive impact also. I mean, you're reminded every single day of what your father did right there where you played your computer games, and also the creepiness of it too. It's where he grew up. It's the right. same bedroom. I mean, it's mind-bending to really think about what Victoria, the fact that she is having these healthy responses at all is actually pretty remarkable. Mm-hmm. Because that's a lot, because you have a mother that is obviously trauma bonded to him, and then a father who just was putting on a show her entire life. I mean, just and she said how bone crushing it was. That's her daddy, you know, in her mind, mm-hmm. you know, the protector of her, of everything in her life. And to come to find out, because she even said, did you think of me when mm-hmm. you're doing these things to these girls? Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah, and he did not. And that room, the room holds incredible symbolism and power, because the room was where he was enacting his fantasies as a child. Because I think he said he started having these fantasies late teens. It's usually earlier than that. Mm-hmm. And so the room was part of the ritual. So, you know, if a place can be evil, that would be an evil place.
Does it make it better for Victoria, that is answer to the question of what are you thinking of? Are you thinking of me when you're doing this? Are you thinking of not? And I know she's meaning it not necessarily in the way of like, are you killing her and thinking of me? It's, are you considering these people in your life and the consequences to these actions if you were to be caught? And his answer is a resounding no. Mm-hmm. What does that mean to Victoria? Is it better that his answer is no, and that he's not remotely considering this, and he's completely splitting his personality off, and he's living in a different world and a different reality that's all his? Or is it better if he were to say, I considered that, but I thought, you know, I got a good track record and I know I can hide this? I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if there's any good answer to that question, mm-hmm. but I mean, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, probably no good answer, but yeah. I think it was a good question for her, because that's one of the cruel aspects of this, which, again, we can say, you know, we don't have to interview him to say psychopath here, mm-hmm. and no empathy for his wife or for his kids, no empathy for Victoria. And that was probably helpful for her to hear. No, I was not thinking about you.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be kind of horror, like, oh, yeah, and I was thinking about what we go to the Chuck E. Cheese after. You know, that would be even more horrifying. One of the things that she talked about in there, and I think this is applicable to almost anyone who's had some sort of childhood trauma that is revealed later in life, because it wasn't like Victoria was down there watching him chop up people while she's watching the Disney Channel.
Scooby-Doo.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was, they were very separate, but I guess more so speaking to someone who, I don't even know what you'd call it, where you discover that there's so many things in your childhood that were not what they appeared to be. I'm sure there's a word for it, Siobhan. But that's what she's going through. And a lot of people end up having those sort of revelations later in life, not always to this sort of extent, but still traumatic nonetheless, where you look back at your palette of life and things that happened. And for the longest time, when you're thinking about that video game, that TV show, that book that you read in that basement where you had, you know, summers where it was a little bit cooler down there because it's hot upstairs, and it's just, it's a happy place. It's not what it turned out to actually be. Every time you get those memories, you're then triggered back into, oh, that was happy, but my dad was murdering people right over there. It taints every damn thing, and it makes it so difficult then to escape that memory. And because you don't even have to be talking about your dad anymore to then have to be brought back into that world, because so many things in your world are tainted by him that are all indirectly done. How does someone carry the good parts of those memories, the pure parts of the memories of watching the Disney afternoon in the basement or whatever, mm-hmm. and reconcile it and be okay with it and not have to be triggered by it every damn time they think about just normal aspects of life that will come up in any way, shape, or form as they go about their days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no good, easy way to do it because that's where it affects your identity, because it's all those childhood memories that make your identity and make you who you are.
Arc.
Yeah. And that, I think, is the most damaging thing of all this, is your childhood has now been rewritten. Right? Mm-hmm. It's been damaged. You have been damaged. And it's a lot of work to be able to rebuild yourself and reauthor your life. And that's really what's, you know, going to be her work for the rest of her life.
Yeah, Siobhan, with that, I mean, I talk about this all the time when we're trying to predict behaviors of others and understand what makes them do the things they do in life. I talk about that life arc, that spark and inspiration during those formative years of life that we follow the rest of our lives, because those events and things and people gave us a sense of safety, security, that we always want to follow those things that gave us that for the rest of our lives. And it becomes very predictable. So when those things that you thought gave you that sense of safety at that early age get ripped away in a blink of an eye, as a therapist, what do you do? Do you help them hold on to the emotions you had at the time, irrespective of the events that are now come to light? Or do you try to superimpose something else in there? Or do you help them? What do you do in those moments when what formed you and forged you into who you are and the belief system and the morals and ethics you thought you got from that time period in life are totally ripped and told is actually not what it is? What do you replace it with, or don't you replace it?
It's a hard one, you know, because there's no formula, but I think people do compartmentalize to some degree that, yes, there were good times that I got with this man but never lose the fact that, yes, he is a sadistic killer. So it's hard work to do. And you sort of have to hold on to the good bits that you can hold on to, but never lose the other reality. And then the other thing that occurred to me that could be very healing for her is if people can find mentors, or in essence, surrogate parents who are wonderful, good, solid people that step into their lives and can sort of take over that role. And I see that a lot with people who've had childhood trauma. They may be in their 30s now. They don't have good memories of childhood, but they develop friendships with people who are a decade or two older, who can kind of fill that spot in their heart for them. And that can be really good.
So is it okay for her to hold on to the memory of her father as who he was in her mind? Or does she need to erase that?
It's probably impossible to completely erase it, and everybody's going to have different abilities to do that. I have seen some people, let's say, I'm thinking of a case where father was a pedophile, and the kids found out in their teenage years, and they erased him. They erased him. They erased all memory. I mean, obviously, they could have good memories, but they chose not to go there and not to focus on them.
Is there a better or worse to that? Is there a right or wrong? Or is it just always dependent on the individual, as in most cases?
Yeah, I think it has to be individualized. I try to support as much as I can people's path, you know, because we've all got different brains. We integrated things differently. And people are pretty reticent to a therapist coming in and say, now here's the formula, you've got to do this and do that. I mean, it'd be lovely if there were a template, right? But you sort of have to be the companion and walk people through whatever is going to get them to the healthiest place that you can.
Or do all paths lead to healthy if they're able to work through it?
We'd love to see
I'm sorry, I'm pounding you with these questions.
No, they're great. They're great questions, right? I can tell your behavioral science knowledge for both of you. You're very knowledgeable people, so the questions are good. That's why I love this show. But yeah, it's something that I would say is very different depending on the person's capacity. And some people end up really with very, you know, I don't always like the word healthy because none of us are ever perfectly there, right? We're always on the path. We're always working towards it.
A journey, not a destination.
Exactly. But some people end up very functional and other people descend into addiction and, you know, just do not really recover. So
your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube on Victoria's journey. It's very fascinating. And I wish the best for her on that journey, wherever it takes her. Links are in the description. Siobhan's book, Nightbird, available wherever you get books. Go and check it out.
And give it as a gift, too, for someone that might have gone through something or gone through something. I think it's a great gift for others as well. It's very enlightening.
There's a lot of trauma in it and a lot of healing from trauma, which is the important point.
It is. Your thoughts in the comment section, Substack and YouTube. We'll continue that conversation right there.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.